Hello, everyone. Welcome to Moms Talk Autism. This is week three of our series of SOS, Asking for Help, and I am here today with Jean, so stay tuned.
When you become a mom, you never imagine your child getting an autism diagnosis. It feels like your dreams have shattered, like a framed photograph falling off your mantle, exploding into a thousand pieces. But instead of trying to glue those pieces back together, this community of moms is here to help you build a new dream, a better one. So join in the conversation as us moms talk autism.
All right, so if the stars have aligned and I'm actually speaking the truth, the last 2 weeks, you have listened to Tosh and Shannon and myself talk about asking for help and all aspects that revolve around that very sticky, very complicated, very emotional sometimes experience. And today I'm here to talk to Jean about that. We really felt like this kind of organically happened. Like we were all going to be on, and then one by one, we started dropping off like flies. And that first episode, it was just Tosh and I, and we had a really great discussion. And we just really wanted to have Shannon and Jean, give Shannon and Jean that time to talk about these things and their own experiences. Because although we all are moms and we all have neurotypical kids and we all have neurodivergent kids, the ways our personalities, our situations, where we live, all these other factors in our lives change the way that we approach this particular topic. And some of that, I don't know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about all those different aspects. But it's important to realize that when we talk about asking for help, maybe not every situation and every aspect of this is going to apply to you. But between the four of us, we're hoping there's at least something here that makes sense and that you can resonate with. I'm sure there'll be more than one usually. So. And I've brought this up before too, but even if you don't have kids with autism or neurodivergence in your family, this can apply to any family, really. We all have to ask for help regardless of, you know, developmental delays or autism. It's just, it's part of our lives. We have to do this. So take that into account. It's just maybe at a more heightened level for some of us. So I've broken this down into four areas that can be challenges for us when we're asking for help. And Jean has not listened to Shannon or Tosh as of this recording now. You guys have, but Jean has not. So she's walking into this blind. I appreciate the trust that you're giving me.
I mean, I
she's
am
raising her hand.
This is a vulnerable discussion for me. And so I am blindly trusting you right now.
Brittany. She is.
And I want in my mind, I want to like have a Good Will Hunting moment where I just want to beat you up. Like you're,
oh,
you're, you know
oh,
what I mean?
We're going
do you know,
there.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I know what you, yes.
Like that the scene where Will is with, Oh my God.
Ben?
Not
Ben.
Black. Nope.
Oh,
no.
Robin Williams?
Yes. And okay. Robin Williams breaks him.
Yes.
And he's like, you and yeah. And yeah. It's very emotional.
It.
Yeah. That's maybe just to give the audience and any listeners any kind of like what my emotional status is right now. That's where it is. Okay, guys.
That's where we're at. Okay. Proceed with caution. Got that. Got the note. After I stop this recording, you are welcome to curse me out as much as you want, but I want you to hold it in until then.
Oh, I okay? will. I'm not going to. Don't worry. No.
It's
maybe
fine.
Maybe I'll just I'm tell joking. You to bless your heart.
You know what? That's just as bad, I think, but I'll take it. At least
it's coded.
Socially appropriate.
It's coded.
It's coded.
It's the way of the South.
It's got a nice little shiny coating on it. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, I know that this is a vulnerable topic for you, and I know this is hard. Especially we'll get into it, but your recent experiences over the course of the last year and a half, it's been especially potent. So we'll go through these points and then I'll kind of introduce it. And then as we are going through it, I want you to apply it to your own situation. You share whatever you feel comfortable sharing, obviously, you know, things change and we can talk about things in the past too, but we want to focus on current stuff too. And I'll share, I'm sharing little bits of my own story amongst all of these interviews. So, the first aspect of reasons why people don't ask for help or they feel like they can't ask for help is there's a guilt factor to it, right? And specifically fear of missing out on things. And this can be applied to many different situations. For example, like when we're young, we don't want to, you don't want to miss out on your child's first step or your child's whatever that thing is, that dance recital, that gymnastics performance, right? We don't want to miss out on that. And that's, there's a guilt and a fear that can come with that. We also don't want our children to miss out on experiences in their lives. And that's really, really difficult when you have autism or developmental delays of some kind or a disability. There are certain accommodations and things that have to be taken into account, and not everything is fully accessible or appropriate for that person to do. And there's a guilt and a sadness that can come when we feel like our kid should be able to do that or can't do that yet, or comparing or all those things. So I've given you a minute to kind of think about that. Have you ever experienced that fear of missing out for your child in any of those avenues, either with Rory or McKenna or both?
Definitely with both. FOMO is real. But I would go another layer as to the fear of guilt.
Okay, let's dig down.
There is, and I can say this too, because it's a biggest, it's kind of a weakness and an area in which, as an Enneagram 8, you don't like to admit. And there's a lot of pride. And there's ego.
Okay.
And so you are, while you have, you're battling all of that, you also are at odds with your ego while you're sorting this all out as a parent. And depending on whatever the expectations that you think the people in your circles, whether it be your family, whether it be professional, because I can look back at the previous years when I lived in Baltimore versus what life was like when I moved to Texas, because it was a completely different shift. I had a nanny there. I had also an extremely busy life. I ran a business, and you know, I was very active, and there would be nights where sometimes I'd have something every single night of the week, not to mention what I was working from home during the day. But I had help, but I was outsourcing things. But there's this, you are at odds with your pride and your ego and battling those expectations as well as your wants and desires and what you feel like your kids want and what they need. And also that cognitive load, that swirl of all of those other prongs, as you pointed out, about lack of resources, accessibility, all of those things. To me, those things would just exist as they are. You would have to also, to deal with that as another layer, is very humbling. You have to rip away the ego and the pride, because that is the thing that drives where it's like, no, I can do all these things. I can do this. I can handle it. Whatever. I'm going to figure it out. You know, and you start to also get in an area of like, you can disregard what your other options could be, or you rule them out, because you also are ruling out, you're worried as a mother. I mean, I knew, and I had this with my nanny, because she was my stepmom. There was this battle of control. And you don't want, if you do have to ask for help, and this is just talking from a motherhood perspective, not even talking about the neurodivergent piece, which is a whole nother layer. But this, again, we didn't know Rory was autistic. There was this constant thing of like, she was like, well, I know your son better than you do as a mother. And I was like, and it was constant. There would be times where it was said directly and both indirectly to me. And that was one of the worst feelings ever. So you felt so compelled to, if I don't ever have to, I don't want to have to ask for help because I don't want ever anyone to tell me that they know my child better than I do.
I think you've literally covered every single one of my points in your talk right there.
Oh, really?
You covered most of them. Yeah, well, I think all of them. Yeah.
Well, this episode's not over because I got so much to say. So.
Oh, no. We'll break it down. But you touched on each of them in some way. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, there is, we have the guilt. We have that fear of missing out on giving our kids those opportunities or balancing it out where you want to give McKenna certain opportunities, but you can't because you have Rory with you or vice versa. Right. Mm-hmm. There's all of that part of it. And we could talk about that more in a second if you want. There's the struggle for control, which is a huge one. And I think the other girls and I each have spoken on that one probably the most because we all have, all four of us have slight control issues, just a little bit.
Just a smidge.
in different ways, though, but we all do.
Correct.
Control is always the problem.
It materializes in so many ways.
And even professionally between the four of us, it's always a control problem.
I know. I admitted it before we even went into this conversation. I'm like, Brittany, I am submitting to you.
Yeah.
I am fully trusting you.
She has to say it out loud to manifest it. So make sure that she follows through. Here we are. Welcome to Therapy with Jean.
I'm your subordinate for the day.
I'll take it. Phrasing there, Jean. Phrasing. Just kidding. No. And then, okay. So we have the struggle for control, right? We'll talk about that more in depth. There's the fear of judgment, touched on that. And then there's a responsibility aspect. So out of all of those things, we've got the fear, the guilt, we've got the judgment, we've got the control, and we have the responsibility. Which one of those do you want to like focus on first? I'll give you some control. You can choose.
Hold on. The fear, the judgment, or the
judgment, control, responsibility, or like fear, guilt.
I think right now where I'm at currently, because I've stripped away a lot of the fear and the judgment at this point.
I think all of us have. That comes with experience and time. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's so many things I literally can't control right now that I would have and would have been able to. I was even looking at pictures from like 4 years ago in my life. And I'm like, I can't even, what I could see in the background of my life. I'm like, I was grieving that because I can't even control that right now. I can't even make that look picturesque enough to say that I don't know. So I think right now, I think it's just literally it's responsibility. It's the weight of the responsibility for me right now.
Yeah. And let's break that down. So I'll give kind of my spiel that I gave at the other two episodes and then we'll apply it to your situation. So we all feel responsible for our kids, right? Especially when kids are like itty bitty young, they're all vulnerable. Babies, toddlers, right? Everyone experiences that as a parent. There's a certain level of physical, like keeping this child alive, responsibility that comes with having a young child. And as kids grow, there is a natural progression, maturity, independence that can come with growing up. We all experience it. Mm-hmm. Even our neurodivergent kids experience it to some level. Mm-hmm. That path, though, is extremely different for them versus a typical child. There's variations between typical children, of course. There's variations between all of us. But the neurodivergent, the autism, whatever disability you have, that part of that growing up, that independence, it's going to look very, very different. It looks different between my two autistic kids, even Austin and Ruby. There's vast differences between them and their maturity or growing up or level of being able to be responsible for themselves. In a lot of ways, Ruby is able to care for herself more than Austin is, and Austin is a lot older than her, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a level of vulnerability that we as parents feel responsible for because our children are not necessarily as independent as their peers at whatever age you're at. That's just, that comes with the territory. And because of that, we feel extra responsible for them. There's a level of care that we feel is needed and that we have to maintain or you know, oversee to care for them. So, all right. So that's kind of my spiel. And then, yeah, take that little prompt and tell me about responsibility in your life.
Well, even that way, the lines that you, the last part of the way you phrased that, it actually took me back to right after Rory was diagnosed and that weight. There was not knowing what the trajectory of his life was going to be was an insurmountable amount of overwhelm and worry and concern that I've never felt before in my life. I never was like, there's no thumbprint for this. How did nobody talk? Why is no one talking about this? This isn't the first time. I was baffled. I was baffled by like the fact that the disability is not a new thing. Whether you have a child that's autistic or has some other, you know, medical exceptionality or challenge, whatever it is, why are these conversations not happening? It was almost like I felt like when I had a miscarriage, and I'm like, why are we not talking about normalizing or what it feels like to have a miscarriage?
Yeah, how hard it can be.
And
yeah.
And why are we not having these discussions? So I was so, and then I felt, let's talk about the initial, because of that, because of acknowledging that, sorry, McKenna is homesick.
It's okay.
Because I was acknowledging also that what the concern and worry was in my own life and for my own child of being the person that I am in the world, feeling compelled of, well, this is a gap that needs to be bridged. This is a problem. This is a societal problem. This is an infrastructure problem. Like why that you were, I was immediately identifying that there was an issue and eventually I'm going to have to feel compelled to solve it somehow. That because this is, if those conversations were happening, the worry and the burden that I was already feeling, and I would say burden, I want to say the burden was the unknown. The burden wasn't necessarily like the responsibilities that come with. It was all of the unknown where you felt with your typical child or where you thought your child was going to be typically developing, that there's milestones and trajectories for all of their life until they're 18. There's a roadmap. We've talked about this and other.
You have a map and then you get that diagnosis and all of a sudden that map is wiped clean.
I mean, you just took a lighter and just lit it on fire. What map? There's a treasure map. And then it's just left. You got the scrap of paper and you're like, oh, wait. Then it stops right there. I was like, where does the rest of the trail go to lean to find the treasure? You're not.
And it's,
I don't know. It's a grand mystery, guys.
It's a grand mystery. And not only are you going to have to figure it out, but you need to go find your own paper and your own writing utensil. And then you have to draw your own map. So good luck to you. Have a great life.
And that's why I loved Kelly Coleman's analogy for what do special needs parent do on the airplane? Oh no, we're not worried about the mask. We're actually operating the plane, why it's going down, and having to keep all the passengers safe and sound, and learn how to land this plane to make sure that we're all going to be okay. Like that's what
and
you're
just
doing.
Don't forget to breathe.
And don't forget to breathe. Like this is all happening in real time. Like that's what all of a sudden it becomes your life. All of a sudden you're operating this large piece of machinery that you don't, you're like, I'm not a pilot. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like that is literally one of like the most perfect analogies that I could go down so many rabbit holes with how it applies to our lives and actually what it is to actually run an, you know, to make an airplane go, to make it, to deal and dodge crisis and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's such a real thing. And
it really is.
I think what I noticed was, in addition to that, was then, and I've shared this before, is that I went, when I had that aha moment that this was no longer this acute thing I was dealing with, like, we have, this is going to be for the long term, you know. And this was after 2 years in, realizing it really, truly, like, when I was saying acute, I think after when he got his speech diagnosis, I thought, oh, we got like a year and a half of speech or something, right? But no, then the autism diagnosis, and then I think, oh, we have like four or five years of like therapies, and then we're done. And it's all going to be fine, right? But then I was 2 years into it, went to that conference, and I'm like watching, and I'm other parents that are advocates who are talking and doing presentations. And I'm like, their health is dilapidated. They're not taking care of themselves. They've been at this much longer. Some of their kids are adults. Some of their kids are no longer with us. They're deceased. Some of them are still very having a lot of medical needs and demands on an incessant basis. And I'm like, whoa, we've got, like, everyone talks about self-care. So then I'm like, you know, I'm like, okay, well, what I thought that was going to be my niche, right? I thought I was going to help service our community. Our autism parent community, even mom community, going, how do you develop self-care plans for yourself and why it's a very serious thing as a caregiver? And for a long time, what I had in place was working for me. It was working for me, and I felt it could work for anyone else. What I didn't realize is what was going to happen when I became a single mom and having additional compounded stress due to the nature of the divorce, like not just being divorced in general, due to the nature of the circumstances around it. Those self-care plans I have, like, just like that roadmap, light it on fire.
Yeah, not applicable anymore.
It's not applicable. And then doing more research, and there's a lot of people that are speaking on this topic, and this is just not even related necessarily to being a caregiver, but actually motherhood in general in society now. The reason why self-care plans are not working, because we are trying to solve a problem that is large from the inside in our own little corners of the world here. But there's actually an infrastructure thing that's a problem. And being a single mom now, I can see it, and it's like exposed all the raw angles of like, oh my God. Because when you are in your own little nuclear unit, there are a lot more things that you can control and that you can put in supports for yourself. Especially if you don't have a grand larger village, because everyone's talked about, well, where's our village? You know, that it takes a village to raise a child. And there's that, you know, remark out that you see everywhere. It's like, well, where's the village? When's it showing up? You know? And we've been asking the same questions since we've even had this community, right? Like, that's why we developed this community, is because it's like, we didn't have a village. We want to help people build their village. We want to be a part of their village, you know, one of their diversified portfolio picks of the villages that they decide to reside in, to be a resource. But the reason why, that's why those self-care plans can't work, they're not sustainable, because the infrastructure outside doesn't allow what's happening on the inside to be sustainable. And so the cost of childcare, the accessibility to those things, that is huge, huge, and the demand and the expectation. And especially if you want to be a working mom, and as somebody who is like, you know, I'm trying to create the pathways where I'm making my own revenue and for myself and income. But dancing around with the idea of joining the workforce and understanding that not only are they don't support mothers, but how are they going to even support a mother like me with a child with such unique needs, when there's still the expectations in that world that are not going to meet what's happening in mine?
You've mentioned control a couple of times, and I want to focus on that.
And did I missed it.
Just a few times, just a couple. but yeah, the struggle for control, right? We all struggle for control. Neurodivergent, neurotypical, just all parents across the board. Everything is a control. As parents, we sacrifice control. As soon as that baby is in your arms, you're not in control anymore. Okay. You're just not. Like, let's just be real. You can delude yourself as much as you want, but you are not in charge.
Okay? I always said it was much easier when they just were in your stomach. They were getting fed regularly. You knew they were safe.
It doesn't feel great, but yeah.
I know, it doesn't feel great. Exactly.
It's hard to sleep.
It's not a walk in the park.
We know this.
Not a walk in the park.
No. But you're still in control. Not anymore.
It's like those are the last times you're in control. That's it.
It's done. And it's an ongoing process of realization, of self-actualization, mm-hmm. and realizing that, mm-hmm. no, this little human is really the one at the steering wheel a lot of times. And we want breaks, right? Like, we want breaks, even if it's, I'm not even talking about self-care, entertainment or anything like that, just breaks to do things. You need to go to the doctor, you need whatever it is, right? But we struggle to find those moments where we feel comfortable letting go and asking for help, right? We have to relinquish that control. It is absolutely necessary. We have to do it. Mm-hmm. Jean's taking some deep breaths.
I am.
See it in her face.
Had to. I've been at my lowest of lows I've ever been in my life in parenthood in the past month. In terms of
help. Speaking of building up that village, you're actively doing that right now. Getting McKenna to gymnastics, getting Rory to Special Olympics, all of these aspects, being able to go to your board meetings, all those kinds of things, having people come into your home to help you care for or supervise your kids, right? Mm-hmm. That's happening. You have to let go of that control. And it's uncomfortable.
Oh, it's
it does not feel good. And that's the part. That's why people get hung up on it. Well, it's no. I can't handle it. It's too uncomfortable. I get too anxious. So I'm just not going to do it.
Well, especially if you don't have everything that you want in order in your lives. If your house isn't clean, if you haven't been to the grocery store, if you know, there's certain things, steps you have to skip over and you have to expose to say, here's where I'm falling short. I just can't get this done. So this is what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how much it's scaled. And it's like, again, looking at where my life was 4 years ago, even why it was still hard. There was nothing easy.
Oh, yeah.
And I was still the main caregiver. I was basically a single parent living inside of my home, but I still had another body that I could boss around to get some things done. I mean, I'm going to be real. Or I could put that body in a room and say, I just need your eyes there. And so I could go do something else.
I got to go run to the pharmacy or whatever. Yeah.
Or I could even tell you, hey, because there was that time period for
or go run to the pharmacy.
I need you to go do these things because I can't leave the house because our child's separation anxiety is like, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, it's just totally different. Like I've had to let go of so much beyond what I ever imagined to. I feel so raw, exposed, and vulnerable.
And that's really, really hard to do. And this is an extreme example because of the situation of the single parenting. And because I want to say it's new, but this is still something you're adjusting to, right? You're in it. You're in the middle of a divorce proceedings. Like, this isn't like settled this way and it's not the way that you did it before. So you're learning how to navigate this new lifestyle, right? So would you say though, in this shortened amount of time, has it gotten easier? I don't know if easier is the right word. It's not easy.
I'm less hesitant and reluctant. That's the answer.
Okay.
Less hesitant and reluctant to ask. And I feel like those people
are the people that have offered to help. Those were not empty gestures. They are truly yes. invested in my family and my kids and my purpose and my vision for my life. And they understand the circumstances and they're willing to help out. Like that's half the battle is not only just finding the people. It's that, are those people you're willing to be vulnerable with and let them understand this and
relinquish your control.
And yep. are they like, do they have good intentions? Cause it's not about sometimes. And I did feel like this, like when I lived back East and you go rewind back again to when I had my stepmom, my nanny, I felt like I didn't have any other choices. I kind of felt like there was no one else. This was it. And so I had this default person, but there were so many things that weren't working with me for it because there wasn't shared values beyond what her purpose and function was to be supporting our family in that way in terms of like being Rory's nanny. And there was a lot of boundary issues, but I don't have those here. And in fact, what I'm finding myself doing is like, because I trust these individuals so much, I'm willing to keep moving my boundary to allow them to do more if they would like to do more, right?
That's huge.
Which is a great place to be in and a blessed place to be in because, again, a lot of this help, I mean, I can't pay for all the help that I'm getting. There's most of the help I'm getting is people's pure free time, their own time. It's not
the
it's
gift
not like that.
To you. Yeah. It's so interesting. So yeah, I'm sure the first few times you had to ask and you had vetted out these people, you knew them. It wasn't just some random stranger off the street. Like
correct.
There was a process to getting to the point where you even would ask these people. And we all have to go through that. And that's uncomfortable too. That's really, really hard. But then asking them those first few times was probably really, it was more uncomfortable. It was really, really hard for you. It didn't, I'm okay, sure it
was,
felt
well, my heart
really
was broken.
Gross.
It felt gross. Yeah. My heart was broken that it was like, I don't have any other choices. And then I had to be like, you have to be unattached from the outcome. You have to be like, they could
exactly.
say no. They're going to say no.
They could say no.
They could shut you down.
They could say no. They could shut you down. They could say yes. And then something could go wrong too.
Oh, and
that's a whole nother ask
that
to the control issue, right?
My neighbor gave Rory 2 doses of his blood pressure medicine at one night. Oh yeah, that happened. And so then I'm like, okay, came home from board meeting. I was up till like 3 a.m. I'm monitoring Rory going, is it going to be okay?
That's life. It happens.
I know. I said, I mean, yeah, I've made medication mistakes. It's going to happen.
Sure, I have too. It happens.
It's going to happen with an individual, that's not caring.
But have you cut that person out of your life? Are you?
Absolutely
not. No.
She's coming over tonight.
Exactly. You're still doing it. You're still doing it just because let's say you've made it. You've vetted someone out. You found them. You've asked for help. Oh man, that didn't feel good, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to let this person in and I'm going to be vulnerable and they're going to see my mess and they're going to see my house and they're going to see my kid and it's going to be rough. And they're going to have to get used to it. And my kid's going to have to get used to it and it's going to be hard. And then something maybe not bad, but like out of the ordinary or that isn't typical or really hard happens while you're gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. Well, obviously this didn't work. I'm not going to do it ever again.
Oh no, I have no choice.
You can't do that.
I can't
you literally can't do that. But even if you do have the choice, you shouldn't do it. Like you have to keep going.
Correct.
You have to keep trying. Maybe you make modifications. Maybe you change things up. Maybe you do use a different person. That's okay too. I'm not saying you have to, but you have to get back on the horse. Like you can't.
Yeah.
You can't just lock yourself in with your kid and be like, never mind. We're never going to do this again. I'm never going to let anyone get close. No, you can't do that. Yeah. It's just so
yeah, you can.
Difficult. And
Absolutely.
That's where that comfort level, that struggle can come from, and that anxiety and that pressure and that responsibility you're feeling once again, and the guilt, all of these other aspects, they're all intertwined, and it's just a lot. So,
right.
I want people to understand and hear that in our own personal experiences that we're sharing, but also know that in general, yeah, like we get it. We're all feeling this in whatever way that it's happening in your, you know, personal experiences. It is different circumstance to circumstance, but the feeling and the overall struggle for control is the same. So
the struggle for control. No, I'm laughing just because, again, you're the person delivering that message. Because the type one person,
everyone
that you
knows
are,
how much of a control freak I am. Yes.
Yes. And you know, you should be proud of, I mean, you would be proud of the Bibles that I've left, you know, my distilled,
your books,
my
book
books,
of Rory's.
The books of Rory and books of like combines McKenna too. And and they've had to change on the weekly basis because there's different variations to those schedules. And so like having to go back to adjust it, and it's just back to when a mistake does happen, I can't go like, oh, it's that part. No, I'm like, all right, well, how can I adjust my communication so I can buffer in or make sure that that doesn't happen again? And I did.
Exactly.
And it made, having more people's hands in the pot too, because now, like the past couple weeks, I had more people's hands in the pot with doing, like one person was doing one administration at a time and another person was doing the last administration. And so it wasn't even the same person handling the administration, you know, and I.
Right. And that's key too. Like Shannon and I chatted about this a little bit because she's working on getting more help now that Maya's leaving, right, for college. Mm-hmm. And she's going to have to expand and she's going to have to let non-family members in, right? And it's hard. And you've had to do that too. You don't just have one person. You have to have multiple people. It's really, really hard to take care of these kids and to ask for help and get that support that you need. And regardless of your situation, whether you're single, married, whatever, but it's not just bringing one person in either. And most of the time, and I think honestly, the best situation is you have multiple people. It's not only diversifying your friendship portfolio, but diversifying your caregiver portfolio, because everybody has their own stuff, right?
Right. Well, you're also
there's a million circumstances,
and you're weighing people's agencies, right? So,
yeah.
my neighbor, who I know I can count on her again for being home base, right? She can be that, but I can't add the other layers of like, well, can you pick up? Can you drop off? Mm-hmm. There's no way that's not going to happen. That's not even realistic.
That's not within her availability, right?
Well, I think she would do it if it was asked, but what that does is put stress on her ability to execute, the other things that I think are the priorities, which is make sure his administrations all did happen, whether it was one with another person here, you're the last, you know, checkpoint, right? At the end of the night, and she's helping do bedtime and bedtime transition and all that kind of stuff. And so it's like, you are literally delegating the responsibility to different compartments of other people in the realm that they can fit it into their lives. But it's also very affirming. And I know you feel this way after you write those books, after you leave to say, this is what it is to take care of Austin, because you're putting out what's been in your mind, what you do on a daily basis without giving it second thought, what you do to take care of your kid. And I think when I looked at that, I mean, I left him for, you know, conference, go to conference or whatever. And this was different because the stakes have the amount of the things that the kids are involved in now. There's so many other moving parts now. There was a much more
extracurriculars.
There was a much more fixed schedule that didn't include all these other intersecting things that they do now. And I'm like, oh God, I'm like, And that doesn't even include, that still includes me when I'm leaving. I'm still doing stuff on the front end of the day. It still requires me to do a lot of preparation to make sure all of those people, like at any given point, I've had four people involved from that 2 o'clock period of time till 9 o'clock or sometimes later at night, where all those transitions for my kids were involved that I otherwise handle.
Yeah, you're the manager of the schedule.
You're like, yeah. What? But how? But not even just the manager, but like you're also the person executing, because there's no one when I'm not necessarily, because I'm leaning on these people to help so much in my absence, I'm not also getting the help or getting the respite or any kind of support that I need when I'm doing it on a daily basis, which sucks. And then there's a lot of cognitive labor, for lack of a better term, sucks, doing a lot of cognitive labor on the decision-making and preparing end of things.
Right.
And even today.
Yeah, even just setting it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Control, baby. It's rough. Gotta let it go. This is, I am speaking to myself just as much as we are speaking to all of you. We both are. This is an ongoing problem and will be for our lives. I mean, and as our children change and mature, because they will, their level of care, their level of needs and support is going to change. And then we are going to have to adjust accordingly. All of these aspects, the feelings of responsibility, our interactions with them, and the level of control that they need, the level of support that they need in order to continue to grow and thrive. And we have to adjust accordingly, moving, zooming in and out with that control. And it's hard. Okay. Last point, and then we'll start wrapping up. Judgment. My little Enneagram 8. Tell me about judgment. This is a whole thing. But no one likes to be seen as incapable or incompetent. No one. Like, that's rough. But we have to open ourselves up to that sometimes. And eventually we get to the point where, at least in some aspects or some areas, maybe taking your kid to the park or going to a restaurant or participating in a sport, whatever it is, that fear of judgment or that fear of other people's opinions can dissipate and we feel it less. Maybe we don't feel it less, but we don't care. Maybe quite as much. Deep breaths again.
I know.
Go ahead.
Interestingly enough, this has come up even in my other domains of my life. Mm-hmm. You mean, we look at this as the caregiver, you're the leader, right? So this is a leadership role. And I'm a leader in other capacities. And our district was going through a superintendent search, which we'll be naming a finalist this evening. One of the candidates wrote a book. I think it's called like Transformation in Leadership. And I was just listening to an audible cut from it. And it was talking about that no one really has real feel of failure. The fear is not failure. The fear is blame and the judgment that comes from that blame. And it's like, that's what it is. And if you even can even cycle through instances that have even happened in our group of four here, for me, that's a big one. It's, I'm not scared of failure and mistakes are going to happen. It's the way that we target blame in those situations. And I think we are worried about that when mm-hmm. we're worried about getting it wrong, about making a decision for our kids, but I have, honestly, in terms of like from a parenting aspect, and I was thinking about this yesterday, because it was, there's things that now that Roy's 10,
And I was talking with another parent who is 11-year-old, who's also profoundly autistic. And we were talking about, this person was at odds with their spouse and where they thought this kid's treatment, this has constantly been like a thing. And that he's frustrated, doesn't support the decisions that were being made and thinks we should have made other pivots, blah, blah, blah. And you're always evaluating, you're looking back like, what did I get wrong? What did I miss? What is he not doing well right now? And Vori's big thing still is eating. And why I have the tool and our very toolbox, and I bought the rubric, I haven't had time to take that assessment tool. Not only not to take the tool, but then have the time carved out to say, how are we going to roll this out? Because that's all on me. But then had me looking back going, God, all of the things that I did, you know, at one point, we didn't even realize this. And this is what drives me crazy too. While we're having this conversation, he had his kid at the same therapy centers that mine was at. And I'm like, you know, and Rory was non-speaking for so long. So if he was saying some kid's name, a lot of it was not intelligible. I didn't know.
Right.
They never share that information. And you go in passing to parents when you're doing drop off and pick up, you have no idea who's who, like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times at that stage when Rory was going to the therapy center, there's times where I was in there just like, it was horrible getting him here or getting him through the door. And I'm recovering from a whole episode that just occurred that I can't even fathom, even like looking around the room to look at other parents and have a conversation. So,
right.
But anyway, in those moments, and we're looking back at, and it seemed like he's in a point where he was looking at going, I feel like he could be in a different place than where he's at. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at going, and the different providers that we had, and I explained one of my big issues. And I said, well, one of the reasons why Rory has this major eating problem or had trauma around food was because of this, what this particular care provider did. And it completely forever changed the course and trajectory. And it's like, you feel such guilt and blame and judgment of that. Especially, I feel it all the time. Like when people are like, does Rory, why won't he eat that? Or why can he, or what does he eat for dinner? And you feel like, well, we actually don't make like a formal dinner for him. And you feel,
maybe vulnerable sharing that even, and like they're going to judge you for even saying
like,
that.
Like, well, you're not getting your kids' needs met. And here I was, and like, I was such a driver for that. I was trying to do course correcting. We tried different things. We tried different protocols and different attempts. Things just have not worked, they never panned out. And then I was like, all right, well, we completely halted from that altogether. And then, you know, we had Elizabeth Klein walk in our, you know, DMs and was like, hey, want to be on your show and introduce this.
Go back
new
and
thing.
Listen to that episode.
Right. Yeah. A hint, hint, wink, wink. But they just, then I'm like, well, that's there. But I also don't have the agency right now to even take that on. But yet it is a need and something that I need to do. I don't know. It's such, you feel judged all the time. And especially like, even when I'm going to the fast food places, they see me every day. They see me.
Okay. Confession time.
They see me every day. Like they should, I'm kind of like annoyed that they just don't know my order at this point.
Yeah. Right.
Do you know what I mean?
They should know your usual.
Especially those people that have the workers that are in the line outside and you know, you like see them. I might as well feel like I should start asking you about your family. You should know what my order is and stop asking me what my name is and how to spell it.
I have confession time for Brittany. Austin's really, really into right now. Burger King has these fiery buffalo chicken nugget things. It's a limited time thing and he wants them every day. And so we go to Burger King. We just go once. We limit it to once. Like he would go multiple times a day if he could. I limit it to once a day. And I go get him these chicken nuggets, right? This is the only protein he'll eat. And I get him these. And I can't make them at home. I can't replicate it. you know, we can go all into that another time. But so we have one that's near our home, and I just, the other day he was home from school and I just couldn't bring myself to go back to that same one because I didn't want to get the judgment, even just they would never say anything, but I just didn't even want the look. So I went to the next town over to that Burger King. I did that.
I've done that.
I mean, he wanted to go on a drive anyway. It worked out, but the main motivation was just so I wouldn't be uncomfortable.
I've done that. Do you know what else I did? And in that same vein, like similar thing of talk about like where you don't want to be embarrassed I left my wallet at home.
Oh no.
And then they're like, well, you can pay through the app. And I'm like, and then I tried to log on to the app, but I have access to the app, but it's technically signed in under their dad. And then I'm texting him and I said, hey, you know, I need you to put money on here because I'm at the drive-through and there's no way I can't give this milkshake back. But they gave it to me and they go, well, you know, see what you can do. Just pull over there. And I'm like,
well, that's very kind.
Well, then I had to leave because I couldn't figure out how to get stuff on the app. Their dad wasn't responding in time. And so I'm calling their store when I get home. No one's answering. Aww. I called corporate headquarters. I'm like, we go here almost like every day. I cannot not rectify this. It's not like,
can we just get like a tab open or something?
I need a house account. Can we bring back house accounts, please?
Fast food place.
But I think they do that with the app per se. But again, I am logged into the app through their dad. And I'm like, because that was set up, you know, forever. And it's worth it because you get points after you've accumulated so many, you get a free. And they're like, oh, you're eligible for $5. Would you like that? Yes, I do. Because you're taking all my money. You know, our fast food budget for Rory, which is basically his grocery budget, is $400 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
If you want to see real time. Let's talk real time, you know,
that's real money.
I have to factor that in. I now know what that is because there's a day once, and I only allow this once a week, where he gets to hit up three places on the way home.
Oh, wow.
He gets to go to Chick-fil-A, to McDonald's, and stop at Pizza Hut.
And he gets his thing at each one.
At each one. He has very specifics. And then you're living on a prayer, hoping that the ice cream machine isn't down at any of these places. I mean,
that's always a factor. Yeah.
It still is, because the meltdown is still a very real thing, even though we can work through it much better. But like.
And I know people are like, oh my gosh, this is like, if this isn't your situation, or maybe it is, and you're just like, whoa, like feel this deeply,
I bet you there's people that are like, hallelujah, there's somebody naming my experience
out there. But it changes too, though, because, you know, Austin 17, we've been doing this for a long time. Now, we don't get fast food every single day of his 17 years of his life. No, but it happens often. But then it also changes, and we introduce a new place, or we're not going to eat that thing anymore. And now we're eating this one thing here, or, oh my goodness, he's eating this thing at home now. So maybe we can substitute. Like, it does change, right? But that fear of that judgment of going up to those places, or going to that park, or seeing that parent that you saw at school, whatever that is, it's real and it's true. And I'm not saying that you're weak or insignificant or immature if you're feeling that, because we all do. I still feel it now. There's a significant safety aspect for Austin when I take him into public that I have to be cognizant of. And there is a level of judgment if I have to use certain amount of force or move quickly to get him into a place where he is safe from others, for others and himself.
Oh,
and me too. Like, there's factors involved in all of that. And so I might have to shove him into the car a little bit to get him in there because he's physically larger than I am. And there's a risk of judgment from someone. Now, that is, I know intrinsically that is way more your problem than my problem, because I know I'm doing what is correct and right, but it still doesn't feel great to deal with that, or to even just perceive it. Even if you completely ignore it, you still feel it, because we're human. We feel stuff. Like, I know you're judging me. I'm not an idiot. I can see your face, right? But it's just,
I can see through your skull right now.
I can see what you're, I you know, you do the little eye thing, like, I see you. Yeah. But yeah, but it, you just don't want to deal, right? Because you already have a kid screaming in your head and he's trying to hit you, and it's just all this stuff. So it's just real. It's there. It does. You build up a thicker skin the more often it happens, or the more experiences you have. It will get better that way. It doesn't necessarily get easier. It is not going to get less necessarily. We hope it will with education and, you know, talking about these things with other people and having more exposure and inclusion, all those things that we always talk about. We want it to be less unusual or startling to people, but it is going to happen. And just know that we all feel it, I guess. Like, we're here with you in it at whatever stage we're at. My 9-year-old, my 17-year-old, and everybody in between.
That experience with safety that you talked about, that happens to me.
Yeah.
A lot with the gymnastics situation with McKenna.
Yeah.
Yep. And he, the last time I had him go in there, even for 10 minutes, he was doing things that were completely unsafe, and just weren't, I'm in close quarters with all these other parents that don't have a kid like mine. They don't know. They don't understand. Some of them are also, well, they're like community members within my school district. And they're like looking at me, well, that's a trustee and a trustee's kid. And this is how she's.
So you're talking. Feeling that judgment too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Feeling that additional layer of judgment here. I'm like, I'm the one that fights for our special ed kids and this and that. And, you know, I believe in this and behavior, but I have this high pressure of like safety and compliance and that like desire to comply. So I can like just be able to exist. I want to be able to exist here, like with like all the other parents, and I can't. Yeah. But I'm also having to deal with your judgment, because one, you're either judging me because look at what your kid's doing, lady, or two, now you're judging me for the way that I'm dealing with my kid to satisfy your previous judgment.
Right? You just can't win.
You just can't win. It's a lose-lose situation here. Like,
yeah.
And then you just walk out and you're just like, well, that was great. Buckle up, kid. We're going to the fast food joint.
Right. And we'll have some judgment there instead. No. Well, we got to wrap up, but we want to end. We always try to end with some hope, right? Like, I don't want you to feel like so burdened down, especially since we ended with like people judging us, that there's nothing, like, we're not judging you, right? And we hope that you don't judge us in this way. Like, we're all just trying to figure this out. We're trying to find the supplies to not only draw the map, but to make it up as we go. We're hoping these things help you as you're figuring out your map, and you're asking for that support and that help in whatever capacity that ends up being, whether that's family members, neighbors, friends, people in your community, your own spouse or partner in your house. Like, there's all different levels of asking for help and receiving that support for you as the primary caregiver, you know, in your family for your child. And this is an ongoing conversation and an ongoing development for each of us individually in our own unique situations. And we're just trying to figure it out. So we're hoping this is helpful to you. We would love to hear your thoughts and opinions about each of our stories and each of our experiences and these particular aspects of asking for help. Whether you go ahead.
Do you want to recite what those aspects are to re?
Yes, I do.
Their memory.
I do. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm going to. Yeah. So you can go to our website at momstalkautism.com. You can email us at hello@momstalkautism, and you can DM us on Instagram and other social media at Moms Talk Autism. The best way for us to for sure read it would be an email. That's probably our number one, just because we know we can get those DMs. We try to get to all the DMs, but DMs are really funny sometimes. Sometimes they just kind of flit away into the void. Like, I don't know. Or one of us reads it and then another one's on the page, and because there's multiple ones of us on the page. So just keep that in mind. But definitely, definitely contact us and let us know what you think about asking for help and struggles, triumphs. We love to hear the triumphs, all of those things. So thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening to our little mini series here over the last 3 weeks. And we will see you next week.